Welcome to the On Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Jumpin' James Herbert. It's podcast time.
It's podcast time. It's been a little while.
It has been a little while.
Not for you, just for me. You've been potting.
Sorta. Yeah, I potted a couple of times this week for three episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got some reps in with Ethan Skolnick and Robbie Callen.
So I might be a little rusty.
Yeah, you might, come out of the gate just not even speaking English.
What did you say?
You may not even be speaking English.
Oh, okay. I just wasn't paying attention.
So you are right in form.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Speaking of, let's just tangentialize this thing right away.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on French Canadians?
I don't have anything against them.
Okay.
I don't speak French very well.
Right. What's the relationship like between English-speaking Canadians and French-Canadian?
I mean, historically, there's been a lot of resentment. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that carries over to just the average Canadian person that you'll meet.
Okay.
I will say, if you spend any time in Quebec, in Montreal, and you try to just speak English everywhere and don't give it a go in French, then you do sort of get looked down on. So the few times that I've been to Montreal, I haven't been very often. That's been kind of funny because my French is terrible. I can't speak it. I took it in school, but I didn't actually learn it. So that's a little weird. Would be a drawback. That's one of the many reasons I don't live there. One of the other ones is that they don't have a basketball team.
Right. Yeah. That's troubling.
But I mean, Montreal is a pretty city, and it's rather similar to where I grew up, but a little bit different, and obviously a lot more French.
Okay. All right. That's a satisfactory answer. I was kind of hoping you'd come out man, those guys are the worst. Everyone hates them here. We wish they weren't here. I thought we were going to get a real polarizing thing, but that was a satisfactory answer.
Yeah, I think you might get more if you talk to somebody from there who felt a really strong allegiance to where they're from, which probably is not everybody there, but then you could get some of that.
Okay.
But going the other direction, I don't know. I mean, I guess I was taking Canadian history, I was kind of wow, there seems to be a lot of anger and resentment and whining and back and forth. But that didn't really play a part in my life.
Right. So it's like the Civil War without the war or the horrible oppression of people.
And every once in a while, there's talk of separation.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That will never die.
Oh, so that still goes on to this day.
I mean, the people who want to be separate, yeah.
Do you think they want to be separated more than you want to be separated? I mean, not you specifically. I don't think you care, but I think you're all for Canada in this one. But do you think it's more their side or your side?
No, it's entirely them.
Oh, entirely. Wow.
Yeah, you're not going to find anyone who's we just don't want Quebec to be a part of
it. See, I kind of think Holly McKenzie would just be they got to get out.
Wow.
They're not Canada. As nice as she is. Yeah, I feel like... No, not a shot fired. I could see her just resenting French Canada.
Cananda?
Cananda.
I mean, I don't personally think that she has anything against Quebec, but, I mean, who's to say?
Right, we're going
to... Maybe you'll have to get her on the podcast to ask her all about her political opinion.
Okay. Yeah, what if we just...
Canadian politics.
The Holly Mack Minute, in which we just had her throw her... Canadian political ideas out for a minute, and then she said good day.
And you'll dismiss them if they're not offensive enough or controversial.
Right? Yeah. No, I can't actually validate them one way or another.
Yeah,
because I know nothing about Canada, as we've proven on this podcast many times.
Yeah, there's not that much to know.
I do know you guys are north.
Yeah,
I know that. All right,
we the north. A lot of people care about the Tragically Hip.
Okay.
As I'm sure you found out if you paid any attention to Twitter last weekend.
Right.
Which is unlike any other place in the world. Nobody else cares about the Tragically Hip. But yeah, that's something.
There we go. So maybe French Canada wants to leave.
I'm not saying everyone in French Canada wants to leave. Right, just saying there has always been a separatist movement.
All right. Well, maybe they do. Maybe DeMarcus Cousins wants to leave the Sacramento Kings.
There you go.
There's a segue.
We always end up getting to Boogie one way or another, whether it's your dog
right.
or DeMarcus Cousins.
Right. But DeMarcus Cousins. So I wrote about him for today on his situation with the Sacramento Kings, and I kind of posed it as this is his last real chance at like having a normal existence with the Kings. Not in the NBA, because he could go to another team in 2018, or if not sooner, if they trade him. I had one executive tell me that that there's no way he's staying, that no one thinks he's staying there, which I don't know that – I'm not saying he's wrong, but I don't know that no one thinks he's staying there, even outside of Sacramento. I think that there's the possibility that Dave Yeager could turn this thing around and get him in the right mind space and, like, get him to buy into Dave Yeager, right? Because that's all – that's kind of all Cousins has seemed to want, like, teammates he can trust on the court and a coach he can trust is going to, like, be the right coach for him, right? And he started to get that with Michael Malone. He didn't have that with Paul Westphal, for sure. He didn't have that with George Karl, for sure, because George Karl wanted to get him out of town.
No, he didn't?
Apparently not. I think there was one report in the last year about that. Just one, though.
Yeah, we might have touched on it in
maybe
the
once
previous
or twice.
Podcast.
Right. Maybe yeah. To the point where we got tired of talking about the Kings. Because it was so negative. It was just the same story over and over. But yeah, like I think Yeager can be that guy. Like, I think Yeager's a really smart coach. I think he's good at making those connections. Holding DeMarcus accountable will be interesting. He talked about that on Zach Lowe's podcast of, like, holding him accountable, holding everyone accountable, like really laying this foundation. He even said, like, you know, we're not going to sacrifice wins, but we're not worried about win totals right away, which I don't know that the management is going to agree with that, but for him, that's the way he should approach it. Like, look, we have to do things the right way. So even if we come out and surprise everybody, that's not really going to do anything for us, right? Like, if we're not building the right stuff, you know, you can't really, I don't know, you can't really move forward as an organization, as this team. Like, this team needs a culture, and the culture
right,
has been
exactly.
mired in chaos, and so they don't want that anymore, and so they're hoping Yeager can build that. And if Cousins buys in, it could be pretty fun. If not, then it's going to be the same old crap as always.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I think at this point in the offseason, it's easy to say we're not worried about win. That's not going to be how we measure success. But I think once you get on a 5-game losing streak, then all of a sudden that mindset can change kind of quickly.
Right.
But I do think the main point that he was trying to make is totally valid. I mean, if you're the Kings, like, yeah, you want to win as many games as possible. The most important thing for the franchise is that they start being like a functional organization again. And they start to build some kind of identity. They start to build some chemistry within the locker room and some trust between the coaching staff and the players, because that's the stuff that hasn't been there. Like, it has not been a fun place to work, a fun team to play for. You could see it watching. You could obviously tell from the quotes that were coming out, especially in the second half of the season when the team thought that Karl was going to be fired and ended up having him stay the whole year. Like, it was a total disaster. And as you mentioned at the start of the column, like, that's nothing really new for the Kings since Adelman left. I mean, it's pretty much, aside from that brief happy period under Michael Malone where it seemed like things were going in the right direction, it's been chaos. And Cousins has been a part of all of that.
That was like 3 weeks, right? Like, it really wasn't that long. And 3 weeks, and then he got like meningitis or something. I can't remember what Cousins had. He had some kind of virus, and then once he was out of the lineup, surprise, they were losing games. And then the whole like boil over with Michael Malone and different philosophies happened, and they got him out of there. But that period of like happiness and success was really like not even a month.
Yeah. That's so the Kings have a few things to address. Like, I mean, Yeager keeps saying, he said it when he was introduced, he said it on the Low Post, and the whole thing is he and the front office are like joined together now. They're on the same page. They're in this together. They're a team, blah, blah, blah. And there were reports that that wasn't really the case with Yeager in Memphis toward the end. Everybody knew that that wasn't the case in Sacramento for a long time.
Yeah.
And the idea that they're together now, cool, but will they be together after the next big move that they make? Or if they go on a losing streak and the front office wants to make changes, or the coach wants to send a pretty good player to the bench or whatever. Like, the idea that they're on the same page is nice now, but the thing hasn't started yet. So
yeah, and Yeager has a bit of a reputation, at least around some coaching circles, of like he's always looking for the next thing in terms of like the next gig. And I don't know if that's fair. I don't know if that's accurate. But I've heard that.
He did stay in Memphis for like 9 years.
Right, but it was shortly after. I mean, granted, there was a lot of crap going on in Memphis, but it was shortly after he got the head coaching job that he was like trying to go to the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, that came really close to happening.
Yeah, that came really close to happening. And it's little situations like that where it's not that he's not trustworthy, but there's an insinuation that he may not be all the way in because, and I think a bit of that is survival too. If this is true, is because we've seen like people win Coach of the Year and then get fired, right? Like the coaching profession is a mess. And so yeah, I think like you, I also think you should be looking for the next thing if you're a coach because you never know if you're going to have that security. But that can rub people the wrong way. So it'll be interesting to, like you're saying, yeah, it's easy for everyone to be on the same page now, but if they start out, you know, 8-19 or whatever, something disastrous, like, are they still going to be on the same page, and will they still have that trust within each other that they're trying to build? That's the same with him and Cousins. Know. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's about him building that relationship with Cousins, too. And I think, you know, when you get that quote from an executive, like, that means something. And I don't think it guarantees that Cousins is leaving, but I think clearly the Kings have a long way to go to convince him that this is where he should spend, you know, the next 6 years of his career or whatever. Because they're going to be looking to sign him to another contract when he eventually hits free agency. If not, they're going to have to look into trading him in the next year or two. And I think if you're Sacramento, obviously the number one option is to keep him around, to build around him, because he's an extremely talented player. Like, maybe the best center in the league. I think it's between him and that other center that Jaeger coached in Memphis, right? Like that's who it is to me. Obviously, if you want to put like Draymond Green in there as a sort of center, then we can talk about that too. But regardless, this is an elite player, and they'd love to build around him. But I think as we saw with Kevin Durant leaving the Thunder, like even when you have a really good situation, a good organization, and a history of winning, sometimes it's hard to keep players like that. And I think if anybody's betting on whether DeMarcus Cousins is going to spend his whole career with the Sacramento Kings, like who is going to bet on that? Like
I get wanting that if you're a Kings fan and hoping for that. But like, I expect Cousins to leave in 2018 if he doesn't get traded. I kind of hope I'm wrong on that because I like the idea of him in that city. And I think he can, I think he's a monster. Like, I think he can be really good. Someone said that they thought I was a little soft on Cousins in the article, which I think it was maybe fair, but I feel like I'm pretty on record of, like, look, Cousins doesn't handle the situation all that well. But at the same time,
yeah, I mean,
his entire...
You were critical of Cousins in the story, too.
Yeah, his entire NBA career, like, he's not the best guy to be around, especially when they're losing, but he's also been mired in just this, you know, this chaotic environment in which there is no trust that you can build within the organization. Like, he's already gone through new owners. He's had, you know, coaches try to get him out of there. Like, there's always a new voice. There's no continuity. And I think that, I don't know if panic is the right word, but I think that shows him, like, that this is a situation that, you know, there's some urgency in at all times. And if you don't feel comfortable in that, you're going to either lash out or you're going to want to get out, or both in his case.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, like, I was talking to Jason Thompson about his time with Sacramento because he was there forever, and he was talking about how hard it was to go and play when you thought the team was about to be getting moved, and everybody thought that was going to happen. And
I mean,
that's just one of the things.
They had that heartfelt like goodbye game in which like Grant Napier and Jerry Reynolds, their announcers, were like crying on camera. Like that. I mean, that's how real their move to Anaheim was going to be. And then shortly after that, they got sold and they were supposed to be on their way to Seattle.
And now suddenly they have a new arena in Sacramento. Like it's turned out well, but there's just been so much stuff that has happened. And I think generally when a player experiences that much dysfunction in one place, that player is going to want a fresh start at some point. Now, what the Kings are hoping is that this is the fresh start, right? Because they have Dave Jaeger and they made a bunch of moves in the summer again after making a lot of moves the previous year too. And they're hoping they're going in a new direction now. And I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that plan. I don't think they should be shopping Cousins right away unless you get some unbelievable offer. I think you hold on to a guy with this amount of talent and you do whatever you can to keep him. But they have a long way to go. And if I'm looking for reasons to be optimistic, it's that I think they're a little bit deeper than probably most people would assume. Like, if you look at the roster with some of the moves they made this summer, like, they got, like, Anthony Tolliver for nothing. They got Matt Barnes there. They have these guys who were,
Aaron Aflalo.
Aaron Aflalo. They got a bunch of veterans who actually know how to play. I think they have a lot more depth at pretty much every position except for point guard than people realize. And in a way, that's a problem because there's this big logjam in the front court. But I think they could be a little better than people expect. Like, to me, I see this team as maybe being, you know, like the 10th best team in the West, which doesn't sound great, but I think relative to where expectations are, that might be a little higher than people think because they've been so bad for so long.
Yeah, I don't really, like, I could see, I don't think they really have a chance of making the playoffs, but I could see them being, like, in that 10 range. I could see them being 14th. Yeah. Like, I don't think they'll be worse than the Lakers by any means, but I think that they're, it's just so hard to project. One, because their point guard situation is a mess. Like, it's Darren, It's Darren Collison who has, like, a trial for domestic violence.
Yep.
And then, like, I don't, like, Garrett Temple is their backup point guard?
Yeah, and then that's it.
Yeah, like, and I mean, you know, Darren Collison's fine, but that's not a healthy point guard situation. And then secondly, and more importantly, how quickly can he get that team to play defense? That, I mean, that's going to be the key. And he's talked about, you know, he talked about on the Low podcast that, that, you know, teaching them defense and stuff is a high priority, but that's, you know, that's tough to get in one training camp in preseason. It, guys do it. It's possible, but it's just, it's tough.
Yeah. I mean, it's happened. It's just rare, right? I mean, like, Steve Clifford came in and did that immediately in Charlotte. Dwayne Casey did that in Toronto. Thibodeau did that
in Chicago.
Yeah. But it's really tough to do with a relatively young team. The good news is they do have some veterans there now. Like, it's not as young a team as it seems like it has been. But, you know, they're going to want to get some of their younger guys in the rotation too. And I think just the culture there has been no defense for so long that could be good or bad. Because I think it has guys like Cousins frustrated. Like, I want to play defense. I'm really motivated to do it. But also, there's just no track record. There hasn't been good communication on that end. It hasn't been a part of the DNA of the team for a while. And some of these players have been there for a few years.
And I think Cousins will buy into Jaeger right away. But kind of in the same vein as, like, them remaining on the same page. Can you stay bought in? You know, can you keep buying in when you're 10 games under 500? Like, that's really the trick into turning the culture around, and that's on Cousins. Like, that's entirely up to him, as long as Jaeger is, you know, teaching and coaching the way that we think he will, because that's the way he did it in Memphis. Like, as long as he's doing that, that is completely on Cousins to buy in, and only him. And any other thing outside of that, him buying into that message, becomes just an excuse for him, right? And it's probably a poor one.
Yeah, I mean, you can see it on film, right? Like, he's a player who doesn't have the outrageous defensive talent like he does in the offensive end. Like, it's, if you compare him to, like, his teammate Willie Cauley-Stein, who, even if he messes up on defense, can make up for it in, like, half a second because he's so quick and he's so long. Like, that's not DeMarcus Cousins. Like, when we saw him play really good defense for Michael Malone, it was because he was smart, he was communicating, the effort was there. But then you see other times when it's March and the team is 20 games under 500 and the effort's not there and he's a step slow and he's not running back. And I think it's talked about more often with him because of the reputation, because people love to analyze his body language and his talk to the refs and all this stuff.
Yeah,
and he gets probably unfairly put under the microscope for that. But also that kind of comes with being a franchise player. And I think with him more so than other guys, it's noticeable when he's not completely there on both ends of the court and he's not completely locked in. And I think there is a difference when he is. And look, we even saw that with Team USA, like in the first round or whatever, the qualifying round, like, his defense was not very good at all. And I thought it got better when the games mattered.
Yeah.
That's kind of a weird thing to say when you're on this basically an all-star team where he doesn't have to do that much offensively. He doesn't have to carry the load like he does for the Kings. But I thought that was there too. And I thought we saw the same thing with, say, Kyrie Irving in that tournament.
I thought we saw the same thing with DeAndre Jordan too. Like, I thought that it, I thought that was probably more of a, I mean, some of it's effort and focus, but I thought it was more of a continuity thing, right?
Like, a communication thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, and that's tough. And it's, and you know, I think Cousins communicates. I think he does it poorly about half the time, but I think I agree with you that he's not that athletic guy who, like Willie Cauley-Stein, who could just make up for mistakes with that length and athleticism, right?
Yeah.
But when Cousins is locked in, especially when he was locked in those three magical weeks with Michael Malone 2 years ago,
yeah.
you know, it was when he was locked in, like he was a great, or great to maybe strong, but he was a really good positional defender. Like he was in position, he was taking charges. Like that's where I think he can be so valuable for them. And, you know, not, I don't think he can be Marc Gasol, because I think Marc Gasol is just a special defender, but that's the type of guy, like he doesn't necessarily have to be blocking shots and everything, but you have to be in the right space and you have to be working all the time. And that's that accountability that Jaeger will hopefully get him to have.
Yeah. And I am, like, for the record, as much as we're talking about like what could go wrong and like why we wouldn't bet on him staying with the Kings long term and all that stuff, like, I'm actually pretty optimistic about Cousins for this coming season. Like what we did see in Team USA is that he's changed his body. He's in incredible shape. And I think that should make it easier for him to, over the course of an 82 game season, keep up that effort defensively and be able to be that guy that does it on both ends while still carrying this huge load for that team. Because I know they have other scorers. They have Rudy Gay. They might not have Rudy Gay in a couple months, but for now they do. But regardless, everything is going to run through him. And I could see Jaeger making some changes with how the offense works, but I don't see it being some sort of equal opportunity thing, because I don't really think they have the roster for that.
Right.
So he's going to be asked to do a lot, and I think based on the way his body looks now and how everything he said about being serious about winning and being sick of everything that's happened there, I think he'll come in motivated. I think he clearly is already. So I think this would be a great time for him to have a career year, and it would be a good time for the Kings to start going in the right direction. But I do think there is this sense whenever we talk about this team, and you can go back to our podcast last year when we kind of mildly praised their offseason, sort of. There is this tendency to be like, all right, I get what they're doing, but let's just see it, because it could explode at any time.
Yeah, and that franchise has no credit, right? Like they just don't.
There's no track record.
Right. There's not a solid track record. Like
there's
a bad track record, but there's no credit with them. And so you have to build up that credit as an organization, which they used to have. They had that, you know, 15 years ago. They don't have it anymore. And so I think the only intelligent way to look at the idea of what they're trying to do is, well, we got to wait and see. Like that's really the only rational way of looking at it, which, you know, that sucks, but that's how it is for, you know, 10 to 15 organizations every year.
Yeah, it's just most of them don't stay mired in that for so long. And that's when...
Right, it's like them, like the Timberwolves are the only team that has missed the playoffs with a longer drought right now than the Kings. You know, and that's not company you necessarily want to be in.
No, absolutely not. But I think the Timberwolves have a much more defined plan right now.
Yeah, it looks like they've turned things around, but I don't know. They could screw it up, I guess.
But,
I mean, they don't have any credit, right? It's just we like Towns. We think he's going to be, you know, the next Tim Duncan or whatever. And Tom Thibodeau is a guy we do trust.
Yeah, I think Thibodeau's presence there makes everybody trust what they're doing. But you still want to see if this team that was like such a disaster on defense can actually do it.
Yeah, it looks like for the Timberwolves, it looks good right now. But it also looked good in 2013, 2014 when they were supposed to be a playoff team, right? And look how that fell apart. So I just, with that stuff, you really do need to see it for more than 3 weeks, 3 months, a year. Like, it has to be a consistent thing, and that's about building that culture. I think we know Tom Thibodeau is going to build a culture. Whether the guys they have right now fit into that culture or not remains to be seen, but we know he'll build a culture. Is Dave Jaeger going to be allowed to build a culture in Sacramento? Like, right now, everyone's going to say yes. 6 months from now...
Yeah, but we thought Michael Malone was going to.
Right, exactly.
And it came completely out of nowhere when it was like, oh, there's all this discord between him and the front office. I mean, I was just like, what? I thought they were finally figuring it out.
Right, exactly. And I mean, this looks stupid now, but like I thought George Karl was going to be able to do that, because I figured they all were on the same page. Turns out nobody was on the same page.
No, not from even before he was hired.
Right,
It was off to a horrible start.
Right. In theory, I really liked the idea. Turns out the application
was
a dumpster fire.
that's the thing. It's like Carl did have a history of winning. Yeah. Even if he had a history of alienating star players as well.
Every single one.
You just thought, yeah, I mean, you just thought, well, they have a real coach who's proven himself, also like proven himself in the modern NBA, not like forever ago. And they should be able to work this out, but just it just never worked. And the defense thing was a disaster, and the relationships were never there, and it was just never going to work, and they should have fired him before they did. And I think that's really obvious now.
Yeah.
So they have to hope Jaeger's the guy, and if he's not, then they're going to lose Cousins. Like, this is their last shot, and I think everybody knows that.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, we're going to take some questions because it's late August. There's nothing going on.
And we love taking questions.
We love taking questions. It's fun. So we're going to start out with, hey, guest from earlier this week, Robbie Callen of CBSSports.com. Which NBA player would you be least surprised to see on Tiny House Hunters? Now, we did...
J.J. Barea.
Now, Matt Bonner... J.J. Barea. Matt Bonner was on, like, Tiny House Nation. He allegedly has a tiny house in New Hampshire.
No, but that's, I would be extremely surprised if he then went on a competing tiny house show.
Oh, okay.
Because he's already been on one.
All right. Least surprised was a weird guy.
That's a weird guy in the NBA.
Yeah. You know what? I could see. I would not be surprised if like Patrick Beverley was on Tiny House Hunters. He's not. He's not that. He's like what? Like 6'3", 6'2"?
Yeah,
I'd
say 6'2".
Solidly sized human being, right? Like, not for an NBA player, but for whatever. But, like, I think he's quirky enough to where I could see it.
He had a documentary about himself in high school, so he's comfortable around cameras.
Okay, there you go.
That's where I'm going with it.
All right. Okay, piggybacking on this from Jordan White, wants to know, are you team Tiny House or team Fixer Upper? Which show do you like better?
Man, I don't.
You don't really.
This
watch
is embarrassing. I don't watch either of them.
See, all right, I'm on Team Tiny House because I'm kind of over the "Let's fix up this house" show motif. It's fine, and sometimes they're cool, but for the most part, like, I'm just kind of over it. Like, I've just been watching those shows for like 6 years.
Yeah.
Or however long they've been on, like, or at least like in regular rotation. So, like, the Tiny House thing is new to me, so I'm much more on the Tiny House side of things.
I think I'd prefer Tiny House. Like, I watched the Bonner clips, and that was really fun. So I think if I was going to start watching one, it would be that one.
Yeah. All right. From Tiago Nicasio. God, I hope I said that correctly. What's your stance on Con Air sequels? Now, are you a Con Air person? You don't really care about Nick Cage movies, right?
I don't care nearly as much as you do. But, like, I've seen Con Air.
Okay. Do you like
I liked it when I was in high school and I saw it. Yeah.
It's a great movie.
I haven't rewatched it like 90 times like I'm sure you have.
I wonder how many times I've watched it.
You think over or under 100?
I don't know. I haven't seen that movie. I mean, that movie came out in what, like 95, 96? 96?
I thought it was later.
Yes. Oh, man. 98 maybe?
Maybe.
I don't think it's later than 98. 1997. Split the difference.
Okay. There you go.
June 2nd, 1997. All right. So we're pushing 20 years.
Yeah.
I've seen it a lot in those 20 years.
Are you going to celebrate its anniversary?
Of course.
20 year anniversary in some way.
I'm going to figure out something to write about it.
Okay.
Yeah. I've kind of cooled my stance. I still will go to bat for the idea that the Point Break remake should never have happened, and I refuse to watch it, and I'll never watch it. But for the most part, like, a movie gets remade, and people are, like, freaked out because it was a movie from their childhood, and now I just, like, if you make it good, I'm happy. Right? Like I saw the Ghostbusters remake with the female cast, and I really enjoyed it. Like, it was solid. It was solid, like, 6.5 out of 10, which is usually all I want from a comedy. Hit all the beats, had the nice nostalgia. So I was in on that. I wasn't offended that, like, remakes and sequels, like, whatever. Just make it good. I'm guessing the Con Air sequels are not good.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. Like, I think sequels shouldn't really happen for, like, campy movies. Like, I think Con Air is something that people will watch and love and, like, kind of laugh at Nick Cage.
Right.
And they'll have a great time. But I'm just not sure there's a way to update that and keep the original's charm.
Yeah. I like to use charm there. next summer, I've got to make sure that I go on a full Con Air tour with Lee Ellis in Las Vegas. That's my one goal for next summer league.
I think you can definitely accomplish that.
Yeah, I think Lee's in. I think we could definitely figure out the tour and make it worth it.
Sounds like a very solid idea.
Very solid idea. Two thumbs up. Al Ralston wants to know, if you could choose any NBA player to cook you and your family a meal, who would it be and why? My answer is pretty consistent on this. It's always Rasheed Wallace, even though he's not in the NBA anymore. Anytime this situation allows me to hang out with Rasheed Wallace, that is my answer.
That's a really good answer. I'm going to choose Chris Bosh. If you've been following, like, you don't even have to follow Bosh on Snapchat. If you just follow Dwayne Wade, because, like, he and Gabrielle Union will, like, go hang out with the Boshes every once in a while. And every time they do, they show this, like, enormous, like, insanely well-prepared, like, feast that the Boshes have prepared. And I don't know if technically Chris is the one doing the cooking. I think, like, they have a chef that right. does that. But I think that still counts. Like, I would like to go have a meal at the Bosch house.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I definitely think that still counts. Okay. This is getting a little dark. Noah at Notorious NTB wants to know, what player would do best in the Purge?
Wow. I don't know that I have an answer for this.
I'll stick with my tiny house hunters. I'll go with Patrick Beverley. And I don't think that means murdering people. I think that means survival. No? I think that's what being good at the Purge is surviving. I think Patrick Beverley would survive. I have no doubts.
I'm going to go with James Jones.
Whoa, James Jones.
You can't get rid of him. Okay. Every year at the end of the season, he's there.
So like a cat with nine lives.
Yeah, okay. I just want to be around James Jones if I'm ever in a high-pressure, stressful situation, because he will find a way to survive, and he will absolutely keep his cool and be a good leader.
Okay. I think he's tougher than people give him credit for, too. I think people see, like, a slight, you know, 6'8", sort of stretch 4-y guy, not a lot of muscle. And I think people just assume that because of his role and everything, like, he's kind of soft. Like, he's kind of... I wouldn't say he's going to go fight people, but I think he's a tougher guy than people give him credit for.
I think people think that shooters aren't tough, and I don't think that's true at all.
Right.
Like, I would say, like, Kyle Korver is, like, a tough player.
Yeah.
And he's had, like, a tough career. And James Jones, I think, yeah, like, no one would have expected him to last as long, and he has. And I think everybody on that team trusts him. And you'll see sometimes he'll come in the end of the game and deliver a tough foul or something. Like, yeah. He'll do that.
Does Kyle Korver still do that training where he, like, carries a boulder at the bottom of the ocean?
He did that last summer.
Yeah.
I don't know what his summer.
Yeah, he probably didn't do much of it coming back from that ankle injury, right?
Right.
I strictly brought this up because you mentioned Kyle Korver and it popped in my head, and I just want to piss off Curtis Harris.
Yeah.
Kyle Korver being able to do that just proves how garbage Aquaman is as a superhero.
Wow.
A regular human being, well, I guess not regular, he's a pro athlete, but whatever. A human being can carry a boulder at the bottom of the ocean like it's nothing to train for his regular job. Aquaman sucks. How about that?
Should people just take 1 second every day to just meditate on the fact that Aquaman sucks?
Yes! No, actually, no. He shouldn't be in our thoughts at all.
Wow.
Maybe, like, once a year we should remind ourselves, like, hey, by the way, Aquaman sucks.
When you do that, also remind yourself that J.J. Redick and Kyle Korver both have kids named Knox. Really weird.
That is weird. Oh, J.J. Redick just had a kid, right? A second kid? All right. Congratulations, J.J.
Yeah, congrats.
All right. Mike Bate, Mike_Soros. If each state, not the entire U.S., had to send a basketball team to the Olympics, how many could medal?
I mean,
I don't know that.
California, I think.
I guess California would medal, yeah.
I don't know that outside of California there's a state that I would take.
I don't think so either.
Like,
I don't know. Like, I guess New Jersey has, like.
No, but Towns wouldn't be playing.
Oh, right, because Dominican.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking that too. I was like, oh yeah, they could have like Kyrie and like MKG and Towns, but
the second person I thought of Kyrie and Towns, and then the third person I thought of was like, was is Andrew Bynum one in shape and two from New Jersey, because I kind of thought he was.
I'm guessing not in shape. I do believe he is from New Jersey.
Why can't Andrew Bynum be an Olympian? Not even for basketball. There's got to be something he could do.
What else do you want him to do?
I don't know.
Dressage?
Actually, yes. I don't like the dressage event, and I hope I don't offend people. Actually, I don't care if I offend people with that. I just don't like horse people in general. Dressage with Andrew Bynum, I'm in.
Yeah, of course you are.
Hand
a seven-footer on a horse?
He'd be
on
amazing.
A horse dancing?
Badminton, he'd be amazing. I was watching a badminton match, and I can't remember where either guy was from, but one of the guys was like this lanky, like 6'8", 6'10 guy, and that seemed unfair, but then I thought I think he may have lost. I definitely stopped watching the match halfway through.
I don't think being like a lumbering seven-footer would help you in badminton.
I don't know, but he could reach everything. It was incredible. Just yeah, watching the sheer physics of it all, like he couldn't recover a whole lot, like if he had to cover some ground, but his just reach was impressive.
I wonder, like, if somebody like Giannis, like how many Olympic sports, if you had just trained him in the sport for his whole life, he could have conceivably made.
I mean, 80% of them, right? Like he's like, they don't call him the Greek normal person, right? Call him the Greek freak. No, like, he can do anything.
No one has ever called him the Greek normal person.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Maybe that's selling these athletes short for who train for... But, yeah, if you just focus...
No,
Giannis,
we're saying he dedicated his whole life.
Yeah, exactly. It. Like, yeah, I think he could... I think almost every single event. I don't know how good he'd be in gymnastics.
I was going to say, I don't think he could have ever done that.
Right. And I don't know. Maybe there is a cutoff in height for dressage, but everything else, yeah, I think he'd be great at it. Like all the track and field events. Maybe the high jump would be hard for him because it's a lot of limbs to get over that bar without touching it.
Yeah.
Pole vault would probably be hard. Yeah, he can jump high. I just think like his legs never stop. Like yeah, eventually, it's his foot's going to hit, right?
yeah,
I think the pole vault would be hard for him because that just seems like a physical, like just a physics problem.
What if he listens to this and he gets really mad that you're underestimating?
Oh, and he's just like
to do the pole vault,
much like Trey Kirby does, like the cannonball, the sea ball videos.
Yeah.
What if he just started like posting pole vaulting videos?
P vault, yeah.
So, yeah, some P vaults.
On his Snapchat.
Okay. Giannis, if you're out there, prove that you can pole vault.
The Bucks do not want him trying that.
Yeah, that's actually probably a horrible idea. No, I think like long jump he would kill, right? Sprinting, he's fast and long. Like I think we've seen that with Usain Bolt. I'm sure there's a tipping point, but I think he would medal. I don't know if that's fair.
I think there's a possibility if he spent his whole life doing it.
Like, maybe. Can you imagine him playing water polo?
I am imagining it, and it's glorious.
He would dominate.
Yeah.
Handball, he would dominate. I guess I don't know about the diving.
I don't know.
I mean, what's the tallest diver?
I've never seen him dive.
6'4"?
Good question.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hey, how tall is Michael Phelps? I feel like he's pretty tall.
6'3"?
Okay.
I really just guessed.
Oh, I thought you looked it up.
I'll look it up right now. Michael Phelps... height 6'4".
Yeah, he seemed taller than the other swimmers.
That's listed though. This may be a situation where he's bumping up.
Why are we
height.
Assuming that swimming takes people's height like basketball does?
I don't know. I got to see him next to Usain Bolt. If he's only an inch shorter, then I'll believe it.
Okay.
Plus, here's a hot take. I'd like to see him next to a real Olympian anyway. Boom!
Wow.
Yeah. How about that? Is it not a necessary shot at an American Olympian?
Like an American hero.
So we're just saying California would medal in basketball?
I think that's all, honestly.
Yeah, I guess I don't... Washington probably doesn't have the height to do it, right?
Okay, this is actually a really good way to think about like the limits of what LeBron James could do. Because if you're just putting like him and like... So who else is from Ohio? You'd have CJ McCollum.
Okay.
You'd have Jakarr Sampson. from Akron.
Right.
Byron and LeBron Mullins? James.
Byron Mullins from... Well, he's not an NBA player anymore, so I guess that doesn't count or matter.
No, but he can still play. But I just wonder, because everybody says, like, oh, you give LeBron and any random guys and they could make the playoffs. Like, how many random guys who played, like, college ball but never professionally or playing professionally elsewhere? Costa Koufos, oh, no, does he play for
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know.
Maybe he could play.
All right, so maybe Ohio? Maybe New Jersey?
But I'm interested in, like, how that would work, because maybe Ohio could do it.
Okay.
I think McCollum and LeBron is a pretty good place to start.
Indiana? Oh, Indiana would be good.
Yeah.
Indiana has a bunch of NBA players, right? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That was a journey.
It's interesting. Yeah.
All right. Francis Adu Jr. on Twitter asks, if you go on a revived Fear Factor show, what would be a challenge you know you wouldn't be able to do?
Oh my, almost all of them. Like, that show was terrifying.
Yeah, I'd have a problem with the heights. I don't like heights. But I think
any of the eating stuff, I couldn't have done that.
I'm not eating bugs.
No, I'm never eating a bug.
I wouldn't say I couldn't eat anything on there. Like, I don't know. I've never, like, the idea of eating an elk penis doesn't seem appetizing, but maybe I could make myself do it because I think I could, you know, convince myself it's like a kielbasa or something. Like, because that's really the mental.
Could you, though?
Right? Well, I don't know. Probably not, because it's not exactly cooked, right? Or it's cooked just enough to not kill you, to be safe.
But so also, they tell you what it is right before they make you eat it. Like, they're just, like,
right,
hovering over you, like, eat this elk peanut.
Right. There's a drop for our listeners if anyone wants to turn that into a ringtone. So I don't know if I could handle the elk penis, but I definitely couldn't eat the bugs.
Nah, the bugs, that'd be trouble for me.
Yeah.
That'd be the, like, all the eating stuff is what I'm most scared of, but I don't think I'd be good at any of it.
Right, the height stuff would be tough, but they also are not going to let you die, right? So I think eventually I would be fine with that stuff because I know, like, all right, I have a harness or whatever. Like, there's safety.
I don't think anyone ever died on that show.
I would assume not, unless they choked on an elk penis. I don't know.
I think we would have heard about that.
So yeah, I like your answer of almost none of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely couldn't eat bugs. Like, when they have to eat, like, a roach, I'd be out. I wouldn't even attempt it.
I would just be like, no, I have other stuff to do today.
Right. I don't like the idea of getting covered in, like, scorpions or whatever, but I could probably tough it out.
For how long? Like,
yeah, that's a good question.
I don't...
Well, I guess
don't
at a certain point, like, I don't know if this would... I guess this would help me. So I used to, like, meditate.
Okay.
Not, like, hardcore, like, om and picture happy place. I would just kind of, like, let my mind go blank, and, like, for 10 minutes a day in the morning, I would meditate. And it would kind of, like, I don't know if centers or whatever, but it was just, like, a cool, relaxing thing to do.
You've stopped?
Yeah, I don't meditate anymore. I haven't meditated in a long time. But I think if I could get back to that kind of meditation state, then I could probably be in there as long as I needed to.
You could be invincible.
Right. Yeah, I'd become a superhero from meditating. Yeah.
You put yourself in the right frame of mind, absolutely nothing can bother you.
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's true for anything, right?
Which is, that's what I'm saying.
The whole Fear Factor premise.
Yes.
Okay. So if I could master Fear Factor, I think I would do pretty well.
Yeah. You just have to be the best meditator in the world.
Okay. At Joe De Leon wants to know, would you rather have 10 tiny houses or one giant house where inside is actually a tiny house for a giant?
Wait, how big is this giant?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Like,
are we talking like George Mearson?
Because I think it's bigger than that. Because he's saying that the house itself is already giant.
Okay.
So I'm thinking like Game of Thrones giant.
Okay, so how big is that guy? Like 20 feet?
Easy.
Easily. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, like I don't know. Is the giant trying to kill me?
No, I don't think the giant is there.
I've lived with people I really didn't like before. Like, I could deal with a giant. Plus, I'm living in a giant house.
I think I want 10 tiny houses.
No, my dream is to move into a tiny house community by buying 4 tiny houses all next to each other, tearing them down, and building a normal-sized house.
to assert your dominance over everybody else that's
there.
Yeah,
just to, because I think it would really hammer home how dumb an idea it was for everyone to get a tiny house.
I'd want 10 tiny houses, but I'd want them to be like constructed immaculately like they are on those shows. So right. I'd get everything that I needed. I'd have like different themed houses. Maybe one of them could be a playhouse like Riley Curry has now, with a ball pit, because that seemed really fun. I think if I had 10 tiny houses, like collectively, I'd have everything that I could possibly need in them.
Okay.
Including like more than one toaster oven, probably.
Oh, God. Burn all those tiny houses down with that dangerous contraption. Matthew Taylor wants to know, what is your starting five for NBA players in Supermarket Sweep?
Oh, a lot of reality TV today.
Yeah. I like that we're calling Supermarket Sweep reality TV.
I mean, what, should I call it a game show?
Yeah, I think like, it's a game show.
A game show?
All right. I want Giannis. I need a real leader, but a guy that's fast. I want John Wall. Boris Diaw. J.J. Redick, because I think he knows things. Like, I think he would know the price of everything in that store.
Okay.
And LeBron, because it's LeBron.
All right. Well, I'm going a totally different way. I don't know if I'm actually going to give you my starting five other than James Jones would definitely be on it.
James Jones is back.
But James Jones is back. But I don't want anyone who's on anything other than a minimum contract.
Whoa. Okay.
Because I want people who like absolutely know the value of a dollar.
I like the strategy.
And have to think about it whenever they go shopping. I don't want anyone who has anybody else do their shopping for them. I don't want anybody who is too famous to go and do it and just orders it all online. Like, I want role players on minimum contracts.
Okay.
A mix of veterans and some younger guys. And all I can tell you is I absolutely want James Jones. I'd have John Lucas III as well. I think he's a smart guy. He's back in training camp with Minnesota.
Yeah.
We'll figure out shooting guard, power forward, and center later.
Okay. All right, I like that. That's a smart strategy. I like that strategy. Chris Swanson wants to know, wraps are listed under the sandwich section. Are soft-shell tacos and burritos sandwiches? Tacos are sandwiches.
I think a burrito is a sandwich, too. I mean, it's essentially a wrap.
Yeah, okay. So that's a big yes on both?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Andrew Johnson wants to know, what is the most ridiculous NBA season-long bet to make? Sixth man of the year, second team all-rookie? I think it's any – if you're betting on second team all-rookie, I'm not going to judge you and say that you have a problem. But you have a horrible gambling problem.
Can you bet on like – can you bet on most improved?
Yeah, I would assume so.
I'd say that's like a pretty dumb one to bet because like – I mean, it's just such a random award every year, and I kind of don't like the award.
Okay.
That would be one. But yeah, second team all – I can't argue that most improved is more ridiculous than second team all rookie. I don't think you can actually make that bet, but yeah, I'd say that.
Yeah, when, like it seems like every year when the all-rookie stuff comes out, people get mad at like a exclusion from the second team, and my thought is always, what are we doing? Like, come on. What are we doing in life that this upsets us?
Like, I mean, I will say, definitely there are players who, when excluded from the all-rookie team at the end of the year, are really mad about it.
I get it for players because I get wanting that honor. If you're a fan, like, that can't be something that you're ranting about on Twitter.
No.
Or saying,
but
like,
I mean,
this is a joke, this is absurd. Like, you're right, it is a joke that you care about the all-rookie team.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, we'll do that one.
All right. Tim Firm wants to know, or I'm, I can't read. Tom Firm wants to know, is Russell Westbrook perfectly positioned to break Wilt Chamberlain's single-season scoring record? Wilt averaged 50. I'm going to say no.
I mean, let's look at perfectly positioned for a second. Like, I think we'd need a drastic increase in the amount of possessions per game again.
Right.
We'd need people to play a lot less defense than they do. I mean, I think, like, we have a start in like a guy that's going to have a really high usage rate. They're probably going to play pretty fast. There isn't really anybody else on the team who was going to dominate the ball besides him. So I get it. Like, he'll probably lead the league in scoring, but no. Like, it's Wilt Chamberlain. Like, right. He averaged, 50. What was it, 50.4?
Yeah.
Or something? Yeah, like, that's never being broken.
What would be funny is if Russ finished the season at, like, 50.1.
Yeah, then we're still right.
Right, then we're still right. And we can tell Tom it was a ridiculous question.
Hey, I want to bring up a question that you skipped.
Okay.
James Feldman asked, it's National Dog Day, so what is Boogie's ceiling?
I mean, low, he's short.
Uh-huh.
Really low. He's currently in his crate sleeping. Last night, we had a great day yesterday. Had a great day yesterday. Last night, Boogie pooped on the kitchen floor.
No.
Went crazy, ran through it. This is all in like a span of 8 seconds.
He ran through the poop.
Ran through the poop and then ran all around the apartment, smearing it all over the carpet. This is at like 11:30 at night. I wouldn't say I was in the best mood for the next hour.
I couldn't imagine you would be.
But luckily this morning.
At that point, you paused Summer Catch. Cleaned it up.
Right. So at that point, I didn't go to bed in a great mood, but this morning he's been adorable, so the ceiling is much higher than it was last night.
Okay. Yeah, that's how ceilings work.
Yeah, right. all right, let's find like one or two more.
Can I keep picking?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Francis at Francis OKC asks, is Dion Waiters now underrated? And I will say, Dion Waiters is always underrated.
You know me. I don't believe in underrated, overrated.
So your answer is no.
My answer is no. But it's also not a no because it's not a yes. It's just I don't. Did he sign on a team? Where's Dion Waiters?
He is in Waiters County.
He didn't sign, right?
Yeah, he signed.
Where did he sign?
He is a full-fledged member of the Miami Heat.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
There was a very over-the-top press release from Pat Riley and everything.
Oh, my God. That completely skipped my mind. Oh, yeah, and they have Derek Williams, too. Oh, my God. Good luck with that.
It's going to be so great.
Yeah. The Down to Dunk podcast wants to know, do you think Steven Adams can be a top five center? Also, do you think he can eat more than both of you combined? I would almost guarantee that he eats more than both of us combined.
How much can you eat in a single sitting?
I mean, what are we talking here?
Like, on a scale of, like, one to Danny Chow.
Oh, I can't eat. I went to Korean barbecue with Danny Chow in L.A. Like a week and a half ago. That guy just puts away food.
Yeah, did you watch his live stream?
I did. It was impressive, that was like 18 hours after we had had Korean barbecue, or maybe like 36 hours, something like that. Like it wasn't that long after. I was still full. He's eating like these gigantic tacos.
He's a machine.
He's incredible, and he's a small guy, like for what you would expect an eater to be.
Well, I mean, but that's how these eating contests always go, right? Like, if you watch the professional eaters, they're never...
Yeah, I guess Joey Chestnut's not that big. Kobayashi's certainly not that big. But yeah, like, Danny's not, like, some big fat guy eating a bunch of food.
No.
I would like to see Steven Adams versus Danny Chow in an eating contest.
They should really try to make that happen.
They should definitely make... Call the ringer and do that.
I'm not willing to say that he can out-eat both of us.
I am. I don't eat all that much. Like, I guess, like...
But I think if it was a competitive...
Yeah, thing, you get the competitive juices flowing. All right.
I think together we could do it. We could motivate each other.
All right. I'm still going to say no.
I think we could take him. But also, I think he's capable of being a top five center.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, who would it be now? And this is at the risk of completely forgetting somebody that is going to... ignite a fan base that we forgot a center, but like Cousins, Marc Gasol.
Cousins, Gasol, probably DeAndre is up there.
DeAndre, Andre Drummond.
Yeah.
Towns.
Towns, if he's not there now, he will be soon.
Right, he will be at some point during the season.
Al Horford.
Oh yeah, Horf.
Does Dwight Howard still enter this conversation?
He should be in the conversation.
Is Valanciunas in the conversation? Is Brooke Lopez?
Yeah, those are good. Those are good inclusions. Yeah, I guess they should be.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, we're at the point where, like, what everybody values out of centers is, like...
Yeah, so, like, Gobert...
is a little different than what it used to be, right?
Like, right, Rudy Gobert is not, but he could play himself into that in the next couple of years.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, Jokic could. Like...
Sure.
Jahlil Okafor, potentially, if he ever figures out defense and rebounding.
I'm over this Jokic thing, I gotta tell you.
Are you really?
I just want to see him do it in, like, some kind of extensive minutes.
I think you will. I think next season you'll see it.
Hope so. I don't know. They're like, they have, like, four guys at every position.
Yeah. I mean, they do, but I think they know that he's their guy.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Who else is... I know we're forgetting somebody.
Are we, though?
I guess, does Tristan Thompson count?
Yeah, but, that's sort of the guy that I was thinking of when I was saying, like... Like, people just want different things out of their centers now. Like, it's not... You wouldn't traditionally call someone...
Whiteside? I mean, I don't think he is a top five center, but...
I mean, I'm way more concerned about seeing, like, what he can do, like, than Jokic.
Yeah.
Like,
I agree with that. So, like...
But, with that group, potentially, Adams could be in there.
I think he's probably a top 10 center now, but we just named a bunch of guys who are, pretty good. But yeah, like I think he could play. I think he's super talented.
And I think there's also, like, of all the guys on that team, like, it's him and Oladipo who have the potential to, like, stretch what they can do a little bit and get more playmaking opportunities. Because I don't think Adams is a bad passer.
No,
I don't think he's
a
bad post up player.
Right.
Like, he just didn't have the ball that often. And I don't think they're gonna play through him. Like, it's gonna be the Westbrook show, but I think they will use him more than they did. So,
okay. We've got three more, and then we're done. At Kirk Hogstrup, that's probably not said correctly, wants to know, can you recommend any NBA documentaries? First one that always comes to mind is Hoop Dreams.
That's the best one.
Still think that's the best one. That came out in, like, 94?
It came out a long time. Like, I watched it when I... Kid.
Yeah, I think it came out in, like, 93 or 94.
It holds up, though. Like,
it does. Really... It holds up. It's...
And you'll see, like, random NBA players.
Yeah, Juwan Howard's in it. Chris Webber's in it.
Yeah.
Isaiah Thomas is in it. The older Isaiah Thomas, not the new guy. And it's, like, it's heartbreaking. It's heartwarming. And I still remember, like, seeing that in a theater. And then shortly after, there was, like, some update on... who is it? It's Arthur Agee and William Gates?
Yeah.
I think those are the two. I know it's Arthur Agee for sure. I think it was William Gates. And I remember, like, seeing the update on them. I think they were in college at that time, and I was so excited, and I was like, these guys are going to be NBA players, and very much were not NBA players.
And the movie that I mentioned earlier, the Patrick Beverly in high school one, was the sequel to Hoop Dream. Like, that was called Hoop Reality.
Oh, okay.
I'll
have to check that out.
No, it's really good. And
Gunning for that number one spot is very entertaining to me. It opens up
I love that movie.
It opens up with Michael Beasley recording himself in an apartment running into walls on purpose.
Yes.
So and also he's talking a lot of trash to Dante Green. So this is like when they were in high school. He's talking a lot of trash to Dante Green, just basically saying, like, you can't guard me and you're ugly.
I remember there's, like, on the DVD of that, there's, like, special features where you get, like, an extra scene with, like, each of the players, and Beasley's one is amazing.
Okay.
I don't know how easy it is to watch that if you don't have the DVD, but, like, maybe it's on YouTube.
Or maybe on iTunes or something, because they have the extras. All right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I know I'm forgetting something.
There's been a lot of good ones. The LeBron documentary, I think, is really good.
Yeah, LeBron documentary is good.
More than a team.
Through the Fire.
More than a game, sorry.
Yeah, Sebastian Telfair one's really good. Yeah, those are the ones off the top of my head.
Yeah. All of the 30 for 30s, like...
Yeah, those are all great. Iverson one's fantastic.
There was a documentary a couple of years ago.
I really enjoyed the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar one that was on Showtime. Yeah. Or was on HBO? It was on HBO recently.
There was a Lenny Cook one from...
Oh, like, that one's depressing.
A couple of years ago. It was on Showtime. Yeah, it was depressing, but it's, like...
It's great.
It's really good, and, like... You'll see, like, young LeBron and young Carmelo and all this stuff. And it's a sad story of a guy that didn't make it But it's really good.
Yeah, it's basically like watching a Jonathan Abrams profile. Like, just like, here's all this talent, and like, it's, they're both like equally beautiful and horrifying at the same time. All right, and then Mike at Tom's underscore son underscore MP has two questions for us that are going to end this podcast. What is the best / worst topping on a pizza?
The worst is mushrooms.
Okay, I'm going to say onions. I really don't enjoy onions on a pizza.
Me neither, but I'd have an onion before I'd have a mushroom.
I disagree with that. I agree that you would do that. I would not do that.
Okay. I mean, the best, like, pepperoni's like the standard.
Pepperoni's the best.
I want to say pineapple just to piss people off.
Pineapple with pepperoni is the move.
Yeah, it's great.
Don't do the Hawaiian pizza with the ham. It's fine, but pineapple and pepperoni is my favorite pizza combination. It's really good.
I know, I love that combination too, but people are going to be really mad at us.
Well, you know what? That's more for us. How about that?
Yeah. More pineapple.
More pineapple for us. You know what? You know, pepperoni is kind of the vanilla ice cream of pizza. So I just want you to realize that.
No, and, I agree, but also I don't get pepperoni every single time I get pizza.
Right. Yeah, I probably don't either. All right.
You just totally killed your own argument for vanilla ice cream from last year.
I'm really
grateful that this happened.
No. Pizza and ice cream are completely different. Completely different.
Of course they are, but your logic is now.
And then another question from Mike. What is your opinion on Olive Garden?
When you're there, it's family.